you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai, speaking with new friend Hardy Smith. Hardy is the author of the Amazon best-selling book called Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game. How are you, sir?
Mickey, I am great, and I've been looking forward to this visit with yourself and your Nonprofit Snapcast audience. So thank you for this opportunity.
Likewise, I'm glad we get to do it. There's a lot in the book. I have only scratched the surface of it. I'm ashamed to say I haven't read all the way through, but it is packed with a lot of useful stuff. I'm going to start our conversation by asking, the obvious question is, what's the book about? And the second question is, what prompted you to write it?
Mickey, the first answer for the first question first. The book is about the challenges that nonprofit organizations face with board engagement, and which is not a new news headline as far as the challenge part goes. What is different about this book is from the board member perspective, based on research I've done, the book Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game identifies the why behind the question that answers the question, why don't board members do what they're supposed to do? And then in answering the why, again, from the board member perspective, the book is a resource tool that provides the how-to solutions for addressing the why and making the needed change so that boards can enjoy positive, productive, and fully engaged boards.
Right. Okay. And easily something that every single board that I've ever dealt with needs to talk about is, you know, how do you foster better engagement? And of course, I'm going to use the A word here, accountability. But so why'd you write it? How did you choose this topic? What drove you to put all this together? Because writing a book is no small thing.
Well, Mickey, I appreciate that question. And you and I share a common relationship and the love of cars. And so I'm a NASCAR guy. I spent 30 plus years in the high performance world of NASCAR racing.
Oh, wow.
So you understand the mindset that I come into this with. Your audience may not, or some of your audience may not. Probably got a NASCAR fan out there too.
Probably do. They may not know about the other podcast that I do, which is called The Thing About Cars, if I'm allowed a shameless plug, but please continue.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, my NASCAR upbringing in the training really taught me developed me into a contrarian thinker and an individual who challenges. Because in NASCAR, you win the race and you immediately tear down your engine, you tear down the car, everything, every nut and bolt. Why would you do that? Because you want to find out why you won.
Yeah.
And then, of course, and so you can replicate that and do it again. And then if you finished second through last place, you considered yourself a loser if you followed Talladega Nights and Ricky Bobby and all of that, and second place is first loser, that whole mindset. Well, you immediately tear down your car because you want to find out why you didn't win and make sure you don't do that again. Well, when I left the world of NASCAR racing and started a consulting business with a focus on nonprofit organizations, associations, chambers of commerce, I wanted to use everything that I learned in NASCAR racing and apply that to the nonprofit sector. So that means, to get into the answer of your question, that means I'm a born challenger. So I look at things and, okay, well, why is that? Why does it work that way? So one of the things that is very easy to see is you indicated, that the nonprofit sector has for maybe from the beginning of time has had a major, major issue and frustration, so much anxiety around board engagement.
Yep.
Now, I keep looking at all the chat rooms. I keep looking at all the podcasts. I look at the blogs. I'm at all the conferences, and it's we're so frustrated about our nonprofit boards.
Right.
And there's a lot of advice out there, a lot of books and a lot of speakers like me and a lot of consultants. And there's a whole lot of advice. But you know what I found, Mickey? Is that all of the advice and the practices, best practices, if you will, that nonprofits keep following and implementing related to their boards, recruiting boards, onboarding, training, all of that isn't working. So, you know, you get back to that old saying that we all are very familiar with, you know, about keep trying the same things and wanting a different result.
Right, right.
Right. And it just drives me, it drives me nuts.
But it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to challenge people to do something different in the world of management. I mean, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you know, we're talking about boards. We're talking about people who are volunteers. And, you know, they're stepping up to do something that presumably is close to their hearts.
Absolutely. You know,
and yet it's still very hard to get those folks to understand, at least in my world, correct me if I'm wrong here, that being a board member is like taking on a second job, a second part-time job. And like you said, we all seem to have the right ideas, but none of them seem to make a difference when it comes to how to engage boards. So how do you bust out of that cycle of expecting different results with the same actions over and over again?
Well, and that is exactly that. What your question, Mickey, is exactly what ultimately led to the book. Mm-hmm. I started out on a quest. You know, it's that NASCAR thing. I've got to find out. It was driving me nuts. I got to find out, why is this? Why isn't it working? So I reached out nationwide to board members. You know, there's so much research around board engagement where it, and no judgment is, I think it's kind of historically factual that so much of the research that the training is all based on and best practice advice is based on, the communication is with the nonprofit professionals. Well, what I did was reach out to board members across the country. And I will totally admit it's in the book, full disclosure, I am not an academic. I am not a professional researcher. And the research I've done, highly, highly crude, not sophisticated at all. And I totally acknowledge that. However, I do explain in the book why I think the research is validated. And anyway, read the book and find that part out.
Yeah, sure.
But what I realized in reaching out to board members is that while nonprofit leaders and professionals are totally pointing the finger of blame, if you will, at their board members, you know, it's their fault that they're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Right.
Well, Mickey, the big reveal that my research produced for me was that there are so many board members across the country who are very frustrated. Now, listen to this. Very frustrated with their nonprofit board experience. So they are pointing the finger of blame at the nonprofit organizations, at the professional staff, for them turning off and good board members becoming disengaged. Mm-hmm. So that's what, you know, the two fingers of blame is what led to stop the nonprofit board blame game. And that's what I set out to do, is why is this blame game existing, and how can I help and produce a fix? And then that research ultimately led to the book.
I know we're supposed to do abbreviated episodes here, but I'm very curious. You say that nonprofit board members experience frustration. What are they saying? What kind of frustration does a board member usually come away with?
Well, to put it into a nutshell for you, number one, they're not pleased with their board experience. So what are some such as is the absolute number one reason they share with me that good board members become disengaged is poor communication. Now, let me explain, go a little bit deeper. In a good, successful relationship between two individuals, and the answer when I'm doing communication training sessions or working with nonprofit leaders and working on being more effective, when I ask what's the most important element of a good, successful, that contributes to a good, successful long-term relationship, 100% of the time, Mickey, without fail, the answer is communication. And it's good communication. So the board members are telling me they are experiencing poor communication. So what are some examples of that? Well, it's information not coming to from staff to the board in a timely manner. Or it's they're surprised. Mm-hmm. Or from a standpoint of it's not being delivered in a platform or in a way that they choose to receive information. So without getting into a whole communication dynamics training session, what we need to do differently in the nonprofit sector is understand that every single board member is unique, and they have individual personal communication preferences on how they want to receive information. So some may want the full report that you stay up late nights, 3 or 4 nights before the board meeting preparing and no one's going to read. Some members may want that.
Yeah.
Some may want an advanced phone call. Some may take an advanced visit. And great, Hardy, you just gave, I don't have enough time. You just added more to do on my list. And my challenge, my pushback to you as a nonprofit professional would be, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want a successful, positive relationship with your board members? And so these extra steps will make a difference. You know, one of the fun tongue-in-cheek articles I've shared about communicating with board members, some of the board members have shared with me, they feel like they're being treated communication-wise like mushrooms, kept in the dark and covered up with, well, yes. You know what? Mushrooms in a grow house are covered up with. So,
manure.
You know, it's all about effective communicating effectively with your board members. Another couple of quick things about why they turn off. Good board members are turned off because you've got the wrong people on your board. You don't have people who are committed to expectations. You don't have people who are committed to raise money. They're not committed to be engaged. And so now not only it compounds, you have the wrong people, and because of poor recruiting practices, and that's outlined in detail how to successfully recruit board members that you want. And right. Then so wrong people plus good board members turned off because you've got the wrong people, and that's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
Those are some of the quick tips. Another quick one is board members don't feel appreciated. They don't feel listened to. You've got high value assets and you're not using them, you know, to the fullest capability. Board members don't want their time wasted. They feel like meetings are a waste of time. They're not productive. They're not considered strategic. They're just rubber stamps. They don't have an opportunity to be engaged to the fullest and utilize their talents and experiences like they truly can be used and not just treated as ATM.
Which raises a very good point. I mean, you know, you definitely don't want to treat your board members just as ATMs, but I'm wrestling with something you just said. You know, many of them are dissatisfied with meetings. So clearly you must have meetings. In some states, it's a law. You know, you must have board meetings, you must record your minutes and all that. But if meetings are frustrating for board members, that doesn't mean you should stop having meetings. It simply means that the shape of the meeting must change, right?
Absolutely. So I'm sending you a virtual high five right here for recognizing that.
I'll take
it. So it's, you know, audience, nonprofit leaders, write this down. Make meetings matter. So from you've got extremely just who are your board members? Think about it. They're very busy people. And any day of the week, they're going to have multiple choices on attending your board meeting or some other meeting. And so the challenge is to make your meetings dynamic. Make them a not to be missed meeting so that board members are engaged from a strategic standpoint. There are action outcomes that are going to happen as a result of the meeting. It's not just a series of reports with no time for board member engagement, no time for questions, challenges, or rebuttals, which are all a part of the duty of a good board member. They should be asking questions and challenging appropriately, constructively, of course. But if there's no time for that, what's in the thinking of the board member's head is, why am I here? So that's the thing with board members and meetings. Make meetings matter.
Make meetings matter. I like it. I may have to steal that title. No, I don't have time to write a book, Hardy. I don't know how you did it. It's just, I applaud folks who can actually make the effort to organize their thoughts long enough to write a book. And this book, like I said, I've only scratched the surface, but even the little bit I've read so far is setting up, you can tell it's setting up the argument and the tips of what should be changed for board members. And I can't wait to finish it just because I know it's going to be a pretty comprehensive look. You've done a really good job in the first half of the book.
Thank you very much.
And I can't wait to finish the second half of the book. But how do we get, I'm not trying to hawk the book here, or maybe I am, I don't know. This is something that I think every board needs to talk about.
It's okay.
I don't want to be accused of anything untowards here, but you know, again, this is a topic that every board I've touched wrestles with. Every single board wrestles with the issue of board engagement. And so I'm just going to say, I think at a minimum, every executive director needs to get a copy of this book and read it. And it would be better if every board member could maybe, you know, borrow it or get their own copy and put some of these ideas to work, because you're right. We need to be communicating better. It kind of shocks me that we don't, you know, it kind of shocks me that there's not an effort to really individually reach out to board members to say, how can you be most effective? You know, how do we move the mission forward more powerfully together? And I think you've really hit all the conversation points to make that happen. So let's come back to brass tacks before we wrap up the episode then. Is, you know, we've talked about board member frustration. We've talked a little bit about why board members don't do what they're supposed to do, lack of engagement, poor communication. We've talked a little bit about relationship mistakes that nonprofits are making with their board members. But let's take a last look again at what actions a board can do, or at least an executive director can do, to develop a positive, productive, fully engaged board. What are some things along those lines that we can share with our listeners?
Two quick things. And by the way, thank you for all those great positive comments about the book. And that would certainly look good in an Amazon review. So just to make that as a note. So let me answer the question. So what can a nonprofit CEO leader do for a more effective board? Number one, let's talk quickly about fundraising. I have no issues with board members and raising money. That's not a philosophical problem for me. What I do have a philosophical issue with, that I will challenge every single nonprofit organization to consider this very carefully. If you want, listen to me carefully, audience, if you want fundraisers, get fundraisers. It is a scientifically research proven fact. There are not very many people on this planet who want to ask someone else for money. So if you think about all those faces around the board table, not very likely that more than one, if even one or two, are willing or want to ask someone else for money. The mistake we make as a sector is we assume, just because you're on the board, you know. I'm going to say, if you don't know what you don't know, okay, think about that. Mm-hmm. But we assume it's your duty to raise money for your nonprofit. All right. The number one responsibility, the responsibility of a nonprofit board is governance. And fundraising, I will submit to you, in my opinion, and that of many others, governance is not fundraising. That's like an add-on. But if you want your board members to do fundraising, that's fine. Here's the mistake. We don't, in the recruitment phase of this relationship, the dating phase, Mickey, if you will, in this relationship, we don't talk about expectations fully. We don't have, we don't develop clarity around expectations. We don't, when we're communicating, you know, I said communication is that number one thing in a relationship. The most important element of good communications is what? Listening. So we don't, once we communicate expectations, we don't stop talking long enough to listen what our board candidate is saying. Are they in agreement? Do they understand? Are they willing to execute what you're asking them to do? And quite often, for some coincidental reason, Mickey, you know what happens in this conversation?
What happens?
For the board candidate, we don't mention, we just don't mention the raising money part.
Right.
And we just seem to not remember to mention the part about them personally giving.
Yep.
Now, why would we do that? Because we don't like asking other people for money either. And the reason we don't bring all these expectations up, we say, you know, we're really stressed. We're pressed for time on getting a board member seat filled. And if Mickey, if I outline all these expectations about the time and the money and raising money, what could happen? You could say no. And I'm back to square one. I've still got that board seat to fill. But I'll tell you what, we're just going to see if you're interested in the mission. We're going to see how passionate you are for making a difference in the world. We're going to get you to the altar. We're going to get you to say yes. We're going to get you to the I do. And then after the I do, we'll come back and say, oh, by the way, here are these expectations, which include personal giving and personal fundraising. Mm-hmm. Now, in the world of marketing, you're a business guy. In the world of marketing, if you have a refrigerator, an ad for a new refrigerator or ad for a new car, and there's a price in the ad, and then you get to the showroom floor, we don't have those in stock. We only had one for sale. Or you want tires on the car. That's an add-on. Well, all that is bait and switch.
Bait and switch.
And in the world of marketing, that's illegal. And you could go to jail. So I don't think you're going to go to jail for misleading a board member, but it is considered bait and switch. Well, there again, that's where you lose a potentially good board member. You've turned them off right from the get-go.
I'm going to defend here some nonprofits in some ways. I think you're right. I'm not entirely disagreeing with you, but I'm going to split the hair a little bit nonprofits in doing their recruiting. You're right. They're just, it's cram time and they're trying to get the seat filled before the next year starts or whatever. And they end up scratching the surface of fundraising. Yes. They don't necessarily neglect it. They probably tell their prospective board members that there is a fundraising job to do, but they only scratch the surface of what that means. Right. And so the board member hears, oh, it's not too much of a time commitment. There's a little bit of fundraising to do, but we really want you at the table. That's all they hear. When they should hear something like, well, it's a time commitment and we'd like you to participate in the fundraising agenda in these ways. And it may not mean making the ask. It may mean, give me a list of 10 people that I should go ask myself.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. And so, you know, that lessens the blow and it's a more in-depth look at what the fundraising agenda really looks like. And hopefully it doesn't scare away the prospect, the prospective board member. So,
this whole angst that I'm sharing, the energy behind fundraising, it's in the context, if you will, of the direct solicitation. So there are lots and lots of ways, just as you suggested, there are a lot of ways to be involved in fundraising that aren't nearly as personally a challenge as a direct ask. It's right. The direct ask that what not many people are wanting to.
Right. Hardy, again, I'm going to recommend the book. The name of the book for our listeners is Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game. You can find it on Amazon, available on Kindle and via on good old-fashioned paperback. And Hardy, if someone had questions and one maybe wanted to get in touch with you, is there a way for them to do that?
Absolutely. And thank you. Very simply, my website is hardysmith.com. And that's, my email is hardy@hardysmith.com. I'm easy to find.
And Hardy is H-A-R-D-Y.
That's correct.
Got it. Thank you. Hardy, let's definitely talk some time about doing an episode of The Thing About Cars together. I think that talking about your history in NASCAR would be a lot of fun to do. And in the meantime, thank you for taking the time this weekend to do a Snapcast episode with me. I hope we get to visit again someday.
I look forward to it, and I appreciate your audience of nonprofit leaders, so many people making such a tremendous difference in the world, making it all a better place. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you, Hardy.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.